I'm Darren.
And this is Lauren.
Welcome to the Lone Star Cyber Podcast. Hey, Lauren.
Hey, good afternoon, Darren.
Hey, once again, we're here with Port San Antonio, and we're with Will Garrett, Vice President and Director of Cybersecurity Development at the Port. Welcome to the Lone Star Cyber Podcast. We'd really like you to talk a little bit about yourself in terms of kind of your background, but also, you know, focused on the port cybersecurity priorities. What are you really driving towards within the port environment?
Absolutely, and thanks for having me. It's great to be on the podcast. So here at the port, I help lead our, not just cybersecurity, but, you know, broadly talent, technology, development, and integration efforts. And so what that really means from a campus perspective is how do we strategically put our resources in redeveloping what was former Kelly Air Force Base to create the right spaces and connection points to bring emerging technology, academic R&D, nonprofits, emerging talent, and this big system integrators in DOD all together in a very dense environment that allows both talent and technology to move from a very public venture commercial stage into a very private classified national security stage. And so that is my role here of helping to think about how we strategically invest in this campus to ultimately help our customers achieve the outcomes they need from a business and operations standpoint.
Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of your anchor tenants, right? We've got, you know, a lot of leading national and regional cybersecurity operations here, 16th Air Force, Air Force Cyber, which is really focused on Air Force digital assets worldwide. You've got the Alamo Regional Security Operations Center, the RSOC, an integrated facility that helps local governments and utilities to collaborate 24/7. What are some of the best practices for enabling collaboration and innovation across these diverse customer sets and tenants?
It's a great question. I think at the heart of it is the TechPort strategy that Jim spoke about earlier. And when you think about whether it's the federal government, you mentioned 16 headquarters Air Force Cyber here in San Antonio, which is no small deal from a location standpoint across the nation. The Alamo Regional SOC, great example of a very creative, nationally unique partnership between the city and CPS Energy. The challenge that both those organizations ultimately get when they try to achieve their mission of whether that's protecting critical infrastructure, citizens' data, or ultimately national security, is how do they tap into talent and technology that currently does not exist inside their ecosystem and thus enter the port. From a campus standpoint, how do we provide the ability to be that third party that allows new technology, new talent, founders that have, you know, potentially solved big problems to have access to those agencies? And oftentimes it can't be accessed within the facilities they currently own. So how do we create, whether it's labs, prototype facilities, kind of beta test centers, where the two parties that often can't connect as easily can on our campus, and ultimately the challenges that our big customers face can be solved by people they never know how to find otherwise than just fortuitously running into them at events, at specific targeted meetups, at seminars, at conferences, at technology demonstrations. And so that's really what we're working on, not just from the cyber and government side, but across our big campus customers on how do we creatively bring what we know they need to the campus in ways that they can't do internally.
And you mentioned campus customers. I mean, just looking at the website, I was so impressed by the breadth of the number of folks that are here and growing. I mean, you're home to the Cybersecurity Manufacturing Innovation Institute, CyManny, the Texas Manufacturing and Transformation Hub Training Center, the San Antonio Museum of Science and Technology, SAMSAT, which looks like, by the way, has a lot of really incredible summer programs that are going on, as well as an Enigma machine that I saw, which got me really excited. I haven't seen one of those since the National Cryptologic Museum back at kind of the near NSA. But, you know, there's STEM, robotics, unmanned aerial systems. I mean, just the list goes on and on of incredible industrial cybersecurity and innovation efforts. So really would love to get your take on the intersection of, you know, robotics and industrial cybersecurity, which seem to be clear two major efforts at Port of San Antonio. So, You know, as we move forward into continually more automated, more networked environments, cybersecurity and industrial controls systems security, you know, both on the kind of IoT and that operational technology, the ICS, the SCADA systems, it becomes so critical. And so, you know, we really get into this world where just everything is impacted, right? Everything is connected. And so would love to hear you speak to, you know, what work are you really driving and leading around that intersection between cybersecurity and industrial technology?
Great question. I'm glad you mentioned some of those amazing campus customers. And I know Jim agrees. We are all so excited. It's not, never about the port itself as the entity. It's about the amazing work our customers are doing. And for the last better part of the last 5 years, Jim, our board, our leadership team, has had a very specific focus around whether you call it industrial cybersecurity, critical infrastructure security, resiliency is a term we use a lot. Foot stomped by the stand-up of the RSOC here on our campus. And then Symani, incredible effort that UTSA is leading on behalf of the Department of Energy. Incredible, not just because the UTSA's parts of that, but more broadly the national ecosystem that's backing it. So Carnegie Mellon's AI Institute is running the AI backbone for what Symani's doing. How they're looking at a future standard set that, to your point, doesn't just deal with the IT side, but focuses on the OT side. And that gets into property technology and critical infrastructure and comms. And you see the emergence of 5G, which everyone loves seeing pop up on their phone. But with that, when you think about the building environment, inherently all the benefits of 5G bring a whole new layer of vulnerabilities in there. And like a lot of things, 16th is a great example of it. Back in 2007, when the Air Force made the announcement to stand up their quote-unquote cyber command, that was in the 24th year, people thought that's when cyber in San Antonio started. But you go back to 1948 when Air Force Security Services started on Security Hill and had 80-plus years of lineage of that. And I think the same thing from a critical infrastructure side. A lot of people in San Antonio go back a year ago when we had a winter storm event. And ultimately, although caused by weather, disaster, it had the same material effect that a bad actor could do a network IT or OT attack. And so it opened a lot of eyes about both the age of infrastructure and how that opens vulnerabilities, but also somewhat the lack of interconnectedness of systems to even determine what faulted, what caused, what triggered an event. And so for us, whether it's the Department of Energy and Symani, RSOC, or our autonomous systems companies like Plus One Robotics, it's how do we bring those minds together? We're seeing it right now in the healthcare and cyberspace. When you're looking at artificial intelligence, machine learning, getting into deep learning, you're having the best computer scientists and artificial intelligence analysts in the world looking across the spectrum to biologists and people that have lived studying the human brain to understand how the actual human brain works and how that may influence building these systems that are supposed to hold much more data than they're today capable of and analyze it much less. And so it's those kind of disconnected parties that don't believe they have solutions or knowledge that are needed across the board. But from our standpoint, one, it's creating the infrastructure and connected environment, but especially on that emerging startups side. We don't invest, we don't take equity, we're not a venture firm, we're a political subdivision of the state of Texas. But oftentimes we act as a very unique type of investor in startups, and that's by helping them bed down and showcase their technology, whether that's at our new Center and Arena that's coming online. SAMSAT and the museum have done an incredible job of giving that launch pad. So it's really, how do we give you a place to start? And then more so, how do we then get you connected when you have a viable technology to the right customers that can help it scale?
Phenomenal. I mean, that the whole idea, you know, when we started this, of helping to connect the connectors, this community is so robust in terms of the partnerships, the sharing that's going on, and you know the idea that you're building the space to make those connections happen and potentially develop over the long term, I think is not only unique, but I think it's fundamental to how we need to move forward across the cybersecurity space.
And I'll give you, you know, Darren, Jim mentioned them too, but Plus One, we talk about a lot of great example, raised one of the largest single venture rounds in my lifetime in San Antonio, headquartered out of the port. Sure gets asked all the time by their investors, largely based on the East and West Coast, why are you here in San Antonio? You're an autonomous system startup. And they talk about cybersecurity and that level of expertise that is critical to ultimately the network of autonomous robots they're creating across the world. Or Zyrek, another company that has gotten some neat press lately. But again, that example of that showcase and connector component of an engineer out of the Netherlands teamed up with people from Southwest Research Engineers that had a concept of using laser ablation technology to figuratively change the face of air paint, depainting, and painting. And it takes almost the human out of it, the chemical out of it, the tremendous environmental hazards that you have paint hangers on property. But what did they need? They needed customers that could validate said technology for running a laser across an airplane. How do you know it's not impacting the structural integrity of the frame? So enter the connector of the connectors type methodology, where we were able to help build them a hangar adjacent to said big aerospace customers that are helping them do something that ultimately may change an entire segment of an industry. So it's a fun role to be in.
Yeah, it's really cool. And we, part of the podcast, we try to focus on kind of building workforce development, building the pipeline, taking some of those folks that may not be in cybersecurity now, maybe adjacent to the space or relevant to the space, like lawyers and, you know, HR people and IT admins and others. So you're doing a lot of overarching STEM work in the port. And can you talk a little bit more about the classroom learning, the camps, demonstrations, and really focused on how the kids can get more involved in cybersecurity and other STEM topics?
Absolutely. And it's fun to be at a job where often success is measured by how many kids we're helping to attract to opportunities. No matter what the level of investment is or actual project, we measure it in a unique way. And at the foundation of our creation as an entity, and really at our leadership team right now, it's about that upward economic mobility, that ability, especially in this geographic region of San Antonio. How do you provide kids, how do you educate parents that the jobs here on campus are for their son or daughter? And I've gotten that question a lot over the last decade and a half of how do I get into cybersecurity? I think the neat thing about cybersecurity as a big word is it's very horizontal in nature. Yes, you could be working in an op center, but you could be working for a healthcare entity or a software company, a SaaS startup. And so it's a unique skill set. I'm a huge fan when people talk about computer science as a language that we should have just as Spanish or French or whatever it may be in the grade school era. And so a lot of it is, how do you capture kids early? And San Antonio arguably has done more than any city in the nation through one vessel, just one example of Cyber Patriot. And I'm sure you've talked about it on the podcast with others, but getting it pushed down into the middle schools to just get kids excited. And when you have them in a program, ultimately 6 years later, they're graduating. Not are they much more hireable or ready to go into an academic environment. But they're excited and well beyond anyone that would be sitting in a traditional classroom environment. Most of our training on campus is through our partnership with the San Antonio Museum of Science and Technology. They've done an incredible job over the last 6 years, brought in nearly 100,000 kids from around the region in as simple as a tour to get them excited of seeing an ops center, seeing a NIG machine or a Tesla coil light up, to coordinated Cyber Patriot and Cyber Threat Defender camps, rocketry camps that NASA has sponsored. And so they serve that kind of initial inspiration mission, and then with the expanded presence that we are building for them in our new Techport Center and Arena, they'll have the ability to accomplish the inspiration piece and then take them immediately across the street to get hands-on keyboard academic learning that a lot of corporate entities in San Antonio are partnering to ensure there's funds there. And I'll mention one other cool thing that is not fully built out yet, but it's coming online with our new center, and that's this kind of convergence of gaming and esports to cybersecurity and computer science technology training. We have a very advanced land gaming center with high performance gaming machines, an arena built to host esports. And we've gotten the question a lot over the last 3 years, why are you launching an esports arena on the southwest side of San Antonio? Well, one, it's to attract kids down to our campus, because unless you're coming to the museum, if you're, you know, under the age of 18, you're probably not driving down on the port's campus on a daily basis. You will, however, sit and watch someone else play video games for a long time. But for us, that's just the hook to get kids here. And so ultimately, from a gaming esports, you could walk into any of our technology customers on the campus today, pick an employee out and ask them what game they're playing with no further background. And they could probably tell you, here's my new title I'm playing. This is why it's great. And this is exactly why it makes me really good at my job, whether that's hands-on keyboard, situational awareness, team building, the ability to sit there and process the amount of information. So there's this direct connect from esports and gaming, not to put aside the fact that there's now scholarship-driven programs, at least two officially here in San Antonio at universities. And so I think there's this very exciting kind of emergence you're going to see out of the port from a San Antonio perspective, that for the first time parents may choose to think it makes sense for son or daughter to be playing video games. But for us, it's all about how do you use that skill set, that passion, connect to a kid right where they are and where they feel comfortable, and then help turn that so that kids understand you don't have to use that to go make a living playing video games, but you can use that to go make a living.
But even using it as a learning tool, right? I mean, think about all the cheats that people do on some of these games to, you know, change their gun to a, you know, spray can and go tag everything along the way, right? So there's that adjacent, you know, curiosity and that could be used as, you know, a potential teaching tool or learning tool within the gaming environment. So it creates that that curiosity, that hacker mentality in some ways, that could be leveraged for, you know, for interesting things.
And they tend to be so mission driven, right? Which I think, you know, that idea of understanding what that operational mission is that we're trying to achieve. What are those steps? Are we going to do planning ahead of time? Are we, you know, am I collaborating or am I talking with other folks and how are we dividing this up? I mean, all of those things do absolutely translate. And I think that teaching kids about how to help translate those skills is so critical. I just think back in my personal experience. So I went to an arts high school. I was like a classical musician and then went to the Naval Academy, right? So a little bit of a pivot there. But I remember when I was talking to the, you know, kind of the folks in admissions at the Naval Academy, and yes, I go to an arts high school. And they go, what sports do you play? Well, I didn't play sports because I was in orchestra and chamber music and music theory and things. And, you know, so that didn't immediately resonate with them, but it was important for me to be able to translate and say, hey, well, in orchestra, like, you have to understand, like, it's the same type of team sport, right? You know when it's your solo, you know when you're in backup, you know these different types of things. And so I think helping, you know, kids and they're going into their careers and understand what are these fundamental tenets of problem solving, of teamwork and collaboration. And, you know, yes, parents, like, they're not that they're, you know, necessarily is the best, you know, benefit of just hours upon hours upon hours of video gaming, but that there are key things that they can take from this and that you're helping to bridge that gap to translate it into skills that will actually set them up for success in where they're going next.
You're exactly right. Like, when you walk into our LAN center when it opens, you won't see any controllers. Now, we have them if you play Xbox or PlayStation. We can plug in a controller, but at a very foundational level, if you take that controller away and replace it with a keyboard and a mouse, apparently kids that don't maybe know how to type as well learn to type, and they don't even know they're learning to type because they're learning how to problem solve with this video game. And so that's the importance of PC-based gaming and those some of those skill sets and how it translates into just real-world material. Things they need to know.
Yeah. So kind of in a similar vein to this hands-on and the maker spaces that you have, right? Because it's so important that, you know, these immersive learning opportunities, it changes the game, right? Versus just kind of reading about something or hearing about something is when you get to build and experience it firsthand. So, you know, you mentioned SAMSAT. There's also the mobile geek bus, right, that's going out to schools. We'd love to just hear more about that, about the types of institutions that are, you know, getting to be part of those experiences today, or if they aren't, like, how could they become part of that ecosystem so that they can get their students exposed and getting the opportunity to make and build an experience firsthand?
Absolutely, and we're huge on that. If you bring a kid down here, it has to be something experiential and immersive. I mean, a nine-year-old today gets excited about a different thing than we did 30 years ago. And so SAMSAT's been really at the forefront of that from our campus standpoint. In fact, across the street from where we're sitting, they've long had a well-kept secret, not on purpose, but a facility they call Foxworks, and it's inherently a makerspace, and it's filled with a lot of amazing artifacts from decades within the STEM space. They did acquire the Geek Bus, and they're working on how that gets redeveloped to inherently do a lot of what Graham was originally intending with the Geek Bus and how you take that mobile on the road into classrooms. We're also looking at the gaming side of that. There's a lot of school districts that are looking to stand up esports programs, but it's not validated by the district, and there's no funding tied to it. How do we take the ability and the technology to them? I think what's going to be really neat about our upcoming center and arena, which opens now in less than 10 days, is the new SAMSAT space is going to be what they currently have as their showroom preview center, 10x that in terms of autonomous systems, SCADA environments, robotics, 3D printing from a lunar habitat stand, security operations, a very changing environment that we never want to say stagnant, that needs to look and feel different to a kid that comes back 6 months later, that gives them that true hands-on experiment component. But we even have other partners, Darren, you mentioned earlier, Symani. They're looking at that of building out a mobile capability as well, both for the tactical resiliency, security, critical infrastructure training, but the ability to go meet kids and parents and schools where they may not be able to get down to the campus. But we are excited when it comes online and just the size and scope of what we're building for the museum. We believe we'll be able to get 100 to 150,000 kids through that facility in an annual year. And you think about the amazing tours we all went on as a kid, if you grew up in San Antonio, the Witte and the Alamo, and maybe go to Six Flags or Fiesta Texas, this becomes a very unique asset for the school districts around Region 20 to plug into and give the kids a different type of experience from a hands-on environment. And yet we always want to make sure when they walk out the door, it wasn't just fun, that there's some way they know they can viably connect to what's the next step. I'm excited about this. Hey, I like aerospace. We want to be very strategic, and we'll be very strategic in ensuring that kind of excitement, inspiration moment is always led up with, hey, there's people here willing to help you take the next step and the next step. And there's a really great paying job in education here in San Antonio. You don't have to go look on the East or West Coast or drive to Austin. It's right here in San Antonio. And so that's really where we centrally see our role as we attract these kids, is to ensure we don't miss that next step in their process.
Field trip. You want to make it that destination, right? Get that form in, and all the kids want to come and touch it, break it, play it, do the whole thing.
Absolutely.
That's phenomenal. So, you know, you've talked a lot about getting different folks engaged with the port. I mean, what would be your kind of closing comments on what you want our listeners to know about the opportunity here, the way to engage, the way to discover more about the port?
Well, reach out. You can go online and find, maybe not Jim, but myself, Paco Felici, any of our information. I think the unique piece about the port that I'd say for everyone out there listening is we are building one of the nation's, you know, fastest growing technology centers in this dense, connected, applied technology campus. And there is a lot of place-based innovation. We have some of, you know, nationally unique partners we've talked about that have physical place-based centers for innovation, and we'll continue to strive to really create actual connections and collisions on this campus. However, it's not just about the campus. Inherently, what we're doing is trying to help startups and technology and talent scale and change the world elsewhere. And so I never lead a conversation or finish a conversation with someone that they have to have an office here. We just need them to plug in. We need them to understand what are the needs of our aerospace maintenance, repair, and overhaul customers that range from artificial intelligence to machine learning to data analytics? What about the electric vertical takeoff and landing partners on the campus that are looking at the future of electric propulsion, how they may impact commercial viability or the cargo disaster relief components? And that technology stack is very horizontal. Or what is that next generation of security operations? We have the Air Force's Installation Command on the campus. And if you think about an Air Force installation, probably every layer of technology you could put in one big, you know, mini city. And so whether that's the base of the future concept of how do you actually take the base around an installation, you know, fence around an installation and move it, or drones and aerial footage and security. And so I think the technology layers across our campus and needs that these customers have are so horizontal and so vast. The message to the broader community, kind of a call to action to plug in, is come get to know us. We want you to come help who's on this campus. And to the extent our campus can help amplify and scale what you're building and developing, we're definitely creating the right ecosystem to let that happen.
Phenomenal. Well, I'm excited. I know I'm actually more excited now than I was prior to coming into this discussion. So thank you for sharing, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Will. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Lauren.